Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and them seals.
It's so funky.
Hey, y'all.
We did it. It's been a whole year. I don't even know. Deborah, where you at? How did we get here? The fact that Deborah Cox knows that I exist and comments on my posts frequently, there is a world in which I will be in the same space as Deborah Cox and I will get a video recording of her doing just that so that I can insert it at any time into anything I'm doing. Like, that's a goal in my life. I say how did we get here because I feel like I started this year as a different person. And I feel like I started this year with a different podcast. And I feel like Small Doses has really grown over the course of this year as I stepped into a new phase of intentionality around this podcast. And that's not just with the topics and the guests, but also with the fact that we added this visual element to the thing, right? And that was because I said, you know what, Amanda? Like, you already have something that's super dope. You need to expand its dopeness and you need to take it to another level. And I really appreciate y'all doing that with me. We got over 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, and we have grown in our listenership exponentially. Y'all are telling your friends, y'all are sharing, y'all are downloading episodes. All of these things are super duper helpful to us continuing to expand. My goal is I want Small Doses Podcast to be a place where people feel like they have to come when they want to tell their stories, right? I want Small Doses Podcast to be a place where people feel like they know that they can go there to be themselves, right? I want Small Doses Podcast to be one of these podcasts that people consider to be at the height of podcasts in terms of consistency, in terms of quality. And you all continuously showing me that you care about it is doing that. So thank you. Now, over this year, we've had such a myriad of guests, right? We've had people come through that are in the celebrity space of things. We've had influencers. We've had experts. We've had politicians. And we've had solo episodes. But I think the biggest thing that's happened this year is we did so much laughing and learning. Am I right, y'all? So much laughing and learning. And that has really let me know that, like, this is a special, unique place that we have to continue to acknowledge. And that's why we're doing a best of. It's our first best of that we've ever done. And we wanted to just take a glance back at some of the highlights, the hits, if you will, the moments that meant a lot to y'all, the moments meant a lot to me, and the moments that, according to the data, hit the charts. So let's dive into it. It is the first ever Best of Small Doses, the 2023 edition. Okay, so let's dive in. Now, we had Tabitha Brown on the show. Now, I was actually very surprised that she was so willing to, like, have time to come on the show because Tabs is busy, okay? Tabs is doing stuff for Target. Tabs is writing books. Tabs is illustrating books. Tabs is cooking. Tabs got a lot going on, but she was so down and she came through the crib and she got to talk to us. And I know that my biggest compliment that y'all can give me is when you're like, I never heard that on another interview. And that happened in this interview. Now, on Side Effects of Having It All, it was very like, I got to talk to Tabitha, I feel like in a much more like homey kind of way than I feel like I've seen other interviewers approach. And I think that's just a testament to her deciding that this was a safe space where she could be like that, right? She told us a story that she hadn't put in her book. She told us about, you know, just not only her gift, but just how illness actually brought her to her gift. And I think that was something that a lot of people could relate to just in the realizing that, like, your body is speaking to you in ways that you just don't understand until you allow yourself to understand. But that episode actually did something really powerful for me. Because in her talking about her deciding to, like, just become obedient to God, it inspired me to ask, like, what does that look like for me? Because I am not Christian. And she was speaking specifically to her relationship with Jesus. But, like, I do believe myself to be connected to a higher power, you know, a part of this universal law scenario. And it really sent me on a quest to find out what that was for me, which is, you know, really committing to flow, not force. But that being said, let's take a glimpse into side effects of having it all with Tabs, Auntie Tabs, that is. What was the turning point from, because before you even get the opportunity to like do things the way you want to, you have to decide, I'm not going to do things the way I've been doing them.
Yes.
So what was the wall that you hit that said, okay, this ain't it? And then what was the next step after that?
The turning point was when I got like very sick in my body, right? And I was on disability for like a year and the doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, right? So they were running tests every week, every month, trying to figure out I had this.
Girl, code switch and tried to kill you.
Well, you know what? I don't necessarily think that, well, it definitely wasn't that because something in my body was attacking itself, right? They were like, it was like an autoimmune, but I was also having depression and panic attacks, but it all was around the same timing. And going to the doctor every week and they can't tell you what's wrong with you, but you know something ain't right. And they know something ain't right, but they can't figure it out. And
well, at least they were acknowledging that something ain't right. Because I know that's been a problem for a lot of sisters.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
something's wrong with me. And they're like, you're fine.
Yeah. They would say, you know, we know it's like autoimmune. Something is making your body attack itself. We just can't figure it out. I even had a rheumatologist tell me, because I was going to all kinds of doctors. She was like, well, you know, normally we just tell women they have fibromyalgia when we can't figure it out. And I was like, yeah, so I just supposed to take the diagnosis because you can't.
So basically they just made up
a
diagnosis for we don't have a diagnosis.
And then that also was a trigger for me because when my mama first got sick, they told her after 6-7 months of trying to figure it out, you have fibromyalgia. But my mama had ALS. And she ended up dying, of course. But it was a trigger. So I was like, oh my God, I probably have ALS like my mama. And they're telling me I have fibromyalgia because they can't figure it out. So that was in my mind. So that also started causing me to have even more panic attacks and depression started setting in. And I just got to probably the darkest place that I ever been in. And I was just like, Lord, you didn't brought me this far just to leave me here. Right. Because I felt like I was on just taking off in my career. It felt different. And this was like January 2016. I had just started doing stand-up. I was doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just went to Sundance for the first time. And I was just like, oh, I just feel this different energy, right? And right after that, I started getting sick. I just, like, it started with a headache in the back of my head. That headache stayed there for 1 year and 7 months. Every day. Never went away. Every day. Right here. Some days were better than others.
Right.
But some days I couldn't walk. Some days I lost my vision for a day. It was just a crazy time for me. And
how old is your daughter at this time?
At this time, Choice is, what, 15?
Okay, so you're in like 14, full 15. Teenage parenting mode with all this going on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I had a baby. Right? But, you know, I had my son. He was a little something, a couple years old. Thankfully, he doesn't remember mommy being sick, but my daughter does.
Mm.
And, I tried to hide it. So I tried to hide how sick I was because my husband had a very stressful job at the time, and I didn't want him stressed.
Bravo, right?
Yes.
The low.
Right? And also, a trigger for me was when my mama got sick, my stepdad checked out, and he was very mean to her. And so I didn't want to experience that in my mind.
There's two people in your life that I got to fight. I got to fight the white people in the Camaro, and I got to fight your stepdaddy. I'm like Arya Stark. I got a list building.
You know, but my mama would always tell me, you know, people handle sickness and grieving differently.
Yeah.
And so I gave him grace, and of course I had forgiven him, and we've had, you know, conversations since then. But that was a trigger for me. So I was like, I got to hide this. Because I don't want my husband to get mad at me for getting sick. Right? And I also don't want to stress him out. And I don't want my kids to be worried like I was worried about my mama. So.
What made you a people pleaser? What do you think?
I think I've always just have had that nature to like love people. And this was happening for so long in my life. But it's also because I wasn't putting myself first.
I was about to say, mm-hmm. I think we call it that, but it's also then it's like.
Everybody, I'm sure I learned it firsthand from my mama because she was the same, right? Yeah. She took care of everybody except her.
To her own detriment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
womanhood.
Yeah. Which is why I'm such an advocate now for me first, you first, right? Freedom.
Which is not selfishness.
It's not selfish. It's self-care.
Yes.
Right? It's taking care of you. We get one of us. We get one. And we get one life, right? And as my daddy always say, and one is enough if we live it right. Right? And so we, it is our responsibility to ourselves to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I had to, when I got into that dark space, I was just like, I really think I'm going to die. I didn't think I was going to see 40. And I was like, okay, Lord, I don't know what to do, you know? And I really, I thought God had forgotten about me. And I also thought he didn't hear me anymore, right? And I grew up in the church. I grew up in the South. So I always prided myself on having this relationship with God. But then I realized that I had a relationship with him, but it was more of what I was taught about him, not what I allowed him to develop inside of me. Mm-hmm. And so in this dark season of my life is when he really got to develop something inside of me, right? And I got to a place where I was like, okay, Lord, I'm going to try one more time, and I'm going to beg, and I'm going to plead with you. And I got in my bathroom. I call this my coming to Jesus moment that I've talked about a million times. And I got in the mirror, and I was trying to connect with them. And they say you can only do that, like your soul, is, you see it through your eyes, right? So okay. I'm in the bathroom, I'm in the mirror. You know I got big eyes, so it was kind of scary. And I'm staring at myself. And I was like, God, if you heal me, you can have me. And I meant it. And it was the first time I had ever...
What did that mean?
It meant I'm not going to try to live my life my way anymore. I'm going to live it how you created me to live it. Which means whatever layers I have created, I'm going to have to strip them away. Mm-hmm. And I'm only going to live a life of obedience. When you tell me to move, I'll move. When you tell me to do something, I'll do it. And when I walked out the bathroom that day, something felt different in me. I wasn't healed, but something felt different.
Well, you were trusting something bigger than you.
Yeah, but it was a shift inside of me.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so...
That feels like freedom because
yeah.
the pressure of thinking that you can control everything. Because mm-hmm. when we people please, we are being nurturing, but we're also trying to control, right?
Yeah.
Like we're trying to make sure that everyone feels good.
Yes.
And that also makes us feel good. And then it also makes us feel like we have done our best to make sure that nothing's going to fall, nothing's going to break, everything is mm-hmm. in place, et cetera. And that is... not possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not possible to sustain. And it's
this
also, like, not our... It's kind of like God plans y'all... I mean, like, you plan God laughs type of situation, right?
Right.
Like,
I think that we all have, like, a responsibility to help each other in the world.
Absolutely.
Right?
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes,
celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So it was kind of a big deal when Candy Burress agreed to come on Small Doses podcast. Now, I ended up going on her show literally because our former producer, Jeremiah Like the Bible, had asked, like, oh, like, would you be down to go on her show? And I reached out to like her page on Instagram. I DM'd the page and asked like who I would talk to about this. And it ended up being Jamie, who actually runs my YouTube now. So shout out to Jamie. But ultimately it was like, I realized I'm a Candy fan. And you know me, 90s R&B is so important to me. So I really realized in real time, like once I sat down with Candy on her own show, speak on it, that I was like, oh shit, I'm nervous. So getting her to come now on Small Doses was really special. And she was so great. And she gave us a whole look, honey. She was giving us Real Housewives of Atlanta confessionals outfit. Okay. I felt like I was dressed down, but we had such a good time and so much fun. And she really gave us insight for real into like what it is to be in a girl group. Again, I want this podcast to be places where you just find out things and learn things from people that have connectivity to places and spaces and ideologies that you may not have. And when they feel comfortable enough to share their thoughts, it really is special. So when Candy talked about, you know, what was going on Escape versus SWV, by the way, nothing she said could have prepared me for what the actual show ended up being. Latasha, get your sister her money.
I was getting so annoyed at that time because I kind of felt like we were like, it was being some very much served to the fans as if we were trying
who was serving
to.
It to them? The media or just PR?
I felt like the PR of my group member. Her team.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they were trying to give a perception that we purposely tried to leave her out of the loop with whatever we were doing at the time.
Well, one thing I appreciate about you is you gonna come on the internet and be like, are y'all listening? That was not the case. That was absolutely not the case. I do not want to be caught up in this distortion of the facts.
No, I honestly was trying to not comment on it that much at the time, and it was kind of being a lot because I just kind of felt like we have so much that is going to come out and air when the show airs. But it was like, you should have heard our group members talking. We was like, oh, I can't wait till they can see this show so they can know. We are not the problem.
So are you excited about the show?
Well, I have not seen it.
Is that normal that you don't see the cut?
No, yeah, we never get to see it until like the week that it airs. But this weekend is the first episode that's going to air. The network, the agent, whatever, who's also my agent, they are purposely, and Mona, they are purposely not showing us the episode because they know we have to do interviews together these next couple of days, and they don't want anybody to get like upset and not want to do the interviews. So they have not even shown us the first episode yet.
How do you live in that? Like, that's a dynamic. I don't think I know that I could not manage that dynamic where people are keeping something from me.
Yeah. Well, I was, I almost cussed his ass out today because he was like, you can't watch the show. And then he gonna tell Jamie that she could go over there and watch the show because we trying to do speak on it before this weekend. And telling her she can go watch the show, but she can't take her phone to record it. But I thought he was saying, like, I couldn't take my... I said, who the fuck are you talking to? Like, I'm a grown woman. How you gonna tell me that I... He was like, well, I wasn't talking to you. Y'all was talking to Jamie. She grown too.
She is.
It's like, what the hell you mean? Like, we gotta go sneak and video our, my group show. Like, that. I was so hot. And he was like, he had to go smoke because I had made him upset. I was like... But it's not cool, man. I get really frustrated in these situations, just like anybody. I know a lot of people are like, how do you continuously do this?
I think the pros have outweighed the cons for me as far as, like, you know, being able to connect with my fans in such a way and really, like, opening up the world to, you know, getting to know who I am. So that in itself is worth something. But when I tell you the stress, there's a lot of stress involved in being on reality TV, especially with my group members, because I take things to heart in a different way with my group members than more so than what I do with the girls on Housewives.
Oh, I would, of course.
Right. It's like the things when they say something to me, like the emotions and the anger is like, you know, it's that, you know what I mean?
But y'all known each other since y'all have, y'all have like 30 year conflicts. So like
we do
every time that comes up, you're pulling from so far back.
The fuck out of me is when we have not discussed a thing and then it's still coming. Hi, how you doing? I'm great. How are you? It's just so annoying.
That's not, I can't.
But
live like
we
that.
Know we have to do this stuff together. So it's like we can't be around each other and not even greet, I suppose. But
I suppose.
But well, sometimes I commend you. Feeling like that.
I commend you. Here's a random question before we play this game. Do you feel like in your relationship you handle conflict the same way that you do with your group?
With my husband? My husband and I, we really don't even argue that often. When we do, because I mean, I am a pro of being very, I'm laid back until I'm not. Okay.
Okay.
So, and a lot of things don't bother me, but I guess with my group members, I've been better at it in my older years of trying to,
pick the battles,
you know, whatever, you know.
Deflect.
I had decided. When was
diffuse,
this?
Defer.
The year that we, what was that? That was that a year ago? You know, well, going on 2 years ago. That the versus year, when we did the versus with SWV.
Yep.
That I was going to have a year of yes with them.
Okay, Shonda.
Meaning. You know, I felt like they were always trying to make it seem like I was the problem or I was stopping them from doing stuff. So, or I was not being cooperative. So I told myself, because I had took it like a little break where they were just doing the shows, just three of them and all of that stuff. So I wasn't really.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I wasn't really. After we did the big tour, it wasn't any fallout or nothing, but I was. Just busy. Had other things that I want to do. And I knew they still wanted to perform and make money, which is important. So, but anyway, they asked me to. So I said, I am going to just let them have it every time. See how it goes.
How'd it go?
They arguing with each other. Like, no, meaning I was like, okay, you know, y'all want to do the verses? I didn't really, at the time, I didn't really want to do the verses because I felt like we didn't have anything set up for ourselves to benefit from. It wasn't like no new single, new album dropping, new tour dropping. It wasn't anything
to like,
because everybody that was doing the verses that really benefited had something
right after that,
right after to promote. So I'm like, what are we promoting? What are we doing? Nothing. But okay, we can do this.
Year of yes.
Year of yes. Let's go. So then they wanted, they had a manager that they wanted to use. I didn't even know this person, but sure.
Year of yes.
Year of yes. This is what you guys want. Okay. Then, oh, this is what we want for business management. Now, I already knew that person, but they weren't my financial manager, but I knew them. But if that's what you guys want, so be it. Go right ahead. And then as the year went on, year and a half, it went to especially this past summer.
So we're back to, so now we're back to a year
We don't have a manager.
Okay.
Well,
one member has a manager.
Yes, she has a manager.
Right.
Right. That's the great way to put it. She has a manager.
Yeah.
The rest of us, our agent is just handling everything for us now. But yeah, it's, no. That's the weird thing. When one person has more of a relationship, your, you know, more communication, doing things, like, it starts feeling like, okay, who's
the point person?
Yeah, are you only looking out for this person? Mm-hmm. Like, what is going on? You know, and it just was a lot. Yeah.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space, because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So something that I really hope happens in 2024 is that we get the solo episodes to get just as much traction as the celebrity episodes or as the guest episodes, only because that's how we started with Small Doses. It was me and Rebecca and Brandon in my little guest room in my apartment, and I'm sitting on a futon with a microphone, just like talking for an hour about my thoughts about things. And so to have y'all like really connect to the Small Doses brand and the podcast in that way, like I feel like that's something that I want to make sure that I continue to do for the folks who have been here for such a long time and for the folks who are maybe even just joining. That being said, Side Effects of Parents was a very special episode because it was like, I feel like I tapped into something that a lot of people have been feeling, but maybe necessarily didn't have the language to. I've been called a truth translator for that reason. But the thing about parents is that it is so personal, right? And it is so private, particularly if you're an immigrant. Like the whole idea of like beefing with your parents is like a non-starter. It's a non sequitur. So to even identify that there is something here was its own leap for me. And then to do it publicly on a podcast is its own leap for me. But then to see so many people see themselves in the conversation, it let me know that I did the right thing. You know, I always say that my transparency is my philanthropy, because I really feel at this point that like I'm living this life as a way to help others through this life. And talking about just my struggles and frustrations with my mom, who a lot of y'all have witnessed, right? Like y'all have seen my mom on my platforms forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And me talking about the realness of that, I think was hopefully like liberating for folks, because I know it was for me, because I think that we have way too much of this like curated content vibe where we think everything is perfect. Like that's where couple goals comes from, right? And like relationship goals and all this stuff. And it's like, nothing is perfect. Not that it has to be healthy, right? But I think sometimes we just devise, we create in our minds a version of a relationship by these small little clips. And we feel like that is something that we should be striving for, but we don't really know the full scope. So side effects of parents, I got to really talk about just what I've been experiencing and going through with my mom. And I really am glad and I'm proud that I was able to help some of y'all find paths forward with your own parents in being able to identify boundaries and challenge their emotional immaturity. And in some cases, muster up the courage for yourself to seek better, you know, spaces of healing. And then at some point, as what happened in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the student becomes the teacher. And then the teacher feels purposeless because now the student no longer needs them in the same way. And they have to find another way to be of value. And I think for a lot of parents, that's when they start becoming toxic. Because they're trying to find a value place in your life and they're like shooting at the sky willy-nilly. They're not really thinking logically because they're thinking more from an emotion space. And they don't have necessarily the tools, per se, to really do the self-exploration of like, what's actually happening here? What am I actually doing? I know I'm telling myself that I'm doing this and I'm showing up this way, et cetera, et cetera, but what's like actually happening? I think a lot of us also then are trying to figure out how to tell their parents that. Because I feel like you then can, you can see what's happening, but like trying to get your parent to hear that or see that is a whole other dance. Because for a lot of us, like any challenging of a parent, they take as disrespect, right? Or they take as an attack, or they may even say it's abuse. It's incredibly demoralizing. And you want to be able to meet your parent where they are and them where you are because you feel like, well, you should know that you raised somebody who's not talking out they. You should know that you raised somebody who keeps it a buck. You should know that you raised somebody who's always seeking the best effort. So in knowing that, you should be meeting me where I'm at in trying to create the best of outcomes for us. So when that isn't being met, it feels kind of just hopeless. And I can tell you that like I did not imagine that I would be 41 trying to like figure out like my mother and I's interactions. And I am, and I know so many other people are. And I have always believed that my transparency is a part of my philanthropy. Cause I know what ends up happening is you feel bad about it. You feel like, and you feel like you're an ungrateful child, or maybe that you, you know, don't have, then you start questioning like, do I, you know, is this, am I falling out of love with my parent, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, well, no, the love is you trying. That's the love. And then there's this, the reality that I talk to so many of my friends and all of them are like, girl, yeah, I had to reassess my, I had to do a whole restructuring of my relationship with my parent. You just now doing that. That's a part of the journey. And once I did, you know, I went through it and then we got to the other side and it is what it is. I think it's just shocking when you're in it because you may not have seen it coming. But I think for the most part, if the effort in your heart is coming from a place of doing the restructuring for the sake of saving and positivity, et cetera, then that's the best thing you can do in any life, any part of your life choices. You know, we've talked about side effects of risk-taking, and it's like, as long as you are moving in positive purpose, that's the only way you can really go about things, and you can't control anything else. And sometimes you got to take a break. Sometimes you got to cleanse the palate and take a break. And it's not even on some punishment, but it's more so on some like, I need to step back so I can see clearly, right? It's like when you got to zoom out on the GPS to get proximity. Like, I need to step back so I can really see where we were and where we're going and how we're going to get there. The job of a parent is, to my understanding, one of the hardest in this life because you have to employ every part of your human existence for another human. right? Like your emotion, your mental, your physical being are all intertwined with getting this person to become an adult. And I always say that, you know, you're not having a baby. You are going to have the baby, but you're raising an adult. The actual goal is not to raise a kid. The goal is to raise an adult who has what the best of life can offer within them to carry forth this society. And there's no way to really do that without hiccups along the way. And so that becomes part of our grace for understanding our parents. You also have to have grace for yourself and knowing that with the way that time moves and generations change and shift, we have new awareness, new understanding, new developments. And just as we went from VHS to streaming within one lifetime, our parents are also adjusting to like going from therapy is for crazy people to can we go to counseling? That's what all the cool kids are doing. But we all adjust. We try. We got to adjust. And the adjusting of you and your parents' relationship is one of the more difficult for all of us to do. I think in giving our parents grace, it is a very ungraceful dance. And it's like watching a white person try and do the electric slide for the first time. It's rough.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so if y'all know Mona Dixon, you know that she is the host of the Don't Call Me White Girl podcast, and they ratchet over there. Okay, shout out to the whole Philly crew. They are ratchet over there. But when I went on her podcast, people were like, oh, they like get along. I think people be thinking I'm some stuffy little, you know, stank broad, and y'all be coming up with all type, not y'all, because y'all be down with the kid, but they be coming up with all types of just like fake and phony, like ideas of who I am as a person. But when a real one see a real one, we connect. And so me and Mona connected, and it's been on and popping ever since. So we were excited to be able to have her come on the show. And we decided to talk about side effects of light skin because, of course, she's so light skinned that they literally call her white girl. And that's why it's called Don't Call Me White Girl. But also because we wanted to be able to have like a nuanced intellectual conversation about the experience of being light skinned that actually like addresses colorism, but that isn't couched in colorism, right? Because that is a conversation that needs to include a myriad of individuals for that are having different Black experiences. For us, though, it was like, okay, this gives us an opportunity to actually address some light skin bullshit that be happening that is part of colorism, but also to address kind of like the experience of what that is. And I know that it was the right thing to do because I had Mona, who is always going to take any situation and bring a level of realness and comedy to it that is going to ground it and remind people that we just talking about experiences, y'all. We got to keep it a buck. These experiences exist.
Because I've heard all kind of crazy growing up.
Yes.
Like, your nose always runs good because you light skin. Light skin girls, y'all keep running noses. I used to hear that all the time. You know what I mean? So when I would tell people stuff like that, I would say it in a way of, oh, I experienced colorism too, because right. These are things that happened to me, and, you know, I had to fight, and I had to do this, and I had to do that, or what, you know. But what I didn't realize is that there's no way impossible that I'm experiencing colorism. That's not what's going on.
Colorism only goes in one direction.
Exactly. So I'm experiencing bullying, even if it's based on my complexion, but I'm not experiencing colorism. And I cannot go on these apps or in front of these cameras saying like that, because like people already got that twisted, and it's very simple. But man, guess what, guys, how I got the epiphany. That's why it's like frustrating. I googled what colorism meant. The definition tells you it's impossible that it's happening.
Well, because colorism at its core is about the fact that dark skin is discriminated against because of its lack of proximity to whiteness. So the proximity to whiteness is what gives supposed access and privilege, right? Mm-hmm. And it is supposed because, like, I think there's also another element of that, which involves the actual light-skinned person also perpetuating the colorism, right? Mm. Like, so I think there's colorism that exists by nature of colorism existing, and then there's a whole other level because there's light-skinned folks out here who consider their light-skinned like a part of their personality, right? Like, they're like, I'm light-skinned, like, yeah. And that means that I act this way, and that means that I show up in the world this way, right. And that means that I'm supposed to get this thing, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera. Like, and which, you know, I think what we see when we see that is we see also somebody who has also been brainwashed by the ultimate culprit of colorism, which is white supremacy.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So what made you eventually Google it?
Because I was tired of getting these think pieces from my, because people really, my fan base, people that like me, they really, really like me a lot. Like, it's not like she's cool. It's like they automate, she's the realest person on the internet. She tells the truth.
You
she's
give a real. That they don't have the courage to do themselves.
So when it's something that I do that is not what they think or they believe, they are hurt and they have to explain.
Join the club.
Mona, yes. I love you so much, but let me explain something to you why you're a piece of shit in this moment. I'm going to tell you why. And right after I tell you this, and once you listen to me and you start talking like me and doing what I say, then you back to being the best thing since sliced bread. But right now, you need to stop right now because I'm from the projects too and I went to jail for DUI. Like, that's how my message is. And they mean that, you know, and it's like, of course, I've read it. These people buy the tickets. These are my that got me popping. This is, right, you know, so right. I do. And I've been that kind of person from the beginning. I've said it on platforms because I want to spread that. Because I hate the whole you get 1,000 comments, you don't tell nobody thank you. You don't say hi back to nobody. You know what I mean? So I try to be connected with these. And people kept coming at me about it so much. I'm like, you know, let me just see.
What did you think colorism was before you Googled it?
I thought it was what it was, but I didn't realize as far as like why it wouldn't be me and why I right. wouldn't be somebody that experienced that. Like, I can tell you about my experiences, whether you think that I'm full of shit because I'm light skinned and I don't know because I'm light skinned, fine, but I can still tell you what happened to me growing up because that's what happened to me growing up. Well, but I can't call that colorism because it's
bingo.
Not. Flat out, it's not. So
I think the frustrating part for a lot of light-skinned women is the feeling that if your experience that you experienced was not colorism, it doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I really feel like all Black women's experiences matter.
Right, yeah. And that's how I feel. It feels muted. It feels like, well, you ain't go through nothing. And, let me tell you from this aspect, because this is how stupid it is. For me, somebody that has been like to jail and been in trouble, I could say, well, you haven't had the real Black experience. You ain't been to jail, because statistically, this amount of Black people go to jail and this amount of people have a ghetto experience as a Black person. That's like a person like me coming like that. Like, okay, so you can tell me you don't know what it feels like and you like you never did, but you've never been in front of a judge. You understand what I'm saying? Because my light skinness didn't help me in court. I don't give a what none of y'all say. Y'all can say it all up and down. You can say it every day. I've been the United States versus Damona. I know what that feel like. If you don't know what that feels like, you can't really run with me and handle conversation. You can't. Until you have to like squat down, spread your ass open and cough.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or until you walk it through a cell or, you know, a pen or wherever they holding you at through male guards that look like they want to take something from you. You know, like you can't tell me about my experience in that. And it's like, that's what would be the same if I came at you like that. And I almost used to think like that, because I would say, well, you've had all these experiences, you know, through college or going to work and all that. I went to jail, and statistically, I was supposed to go to jail because my father went to jail, right? So I had that part of our experience
and if we're
here.
And if we're considering that an authentic Black experience involves this because of the statistical amount of Black people that go, then what makes you...
Yeah, you ain't been to jail. Get out of here, like for real.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, Black media is really its own unique space, because the Black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for Black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping Black people out of spaces of equity, we know that Black media has to be on top of that. We know that Black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence. So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, me and TS, you know, we go together like peanut butter and jelly. That's the homie. And she has had an incredible year herself. I mean, just in terms of her brand, you know, just growing and her really becoming more of a household name as a speaker, as a host, as a comedian, etc. So when TS came on, I already knew this is about to be a turn up, okay? Also because TS's fans, like, they be really with it and they support and love Maddie. But it was such a turn up that we ended up having to do two parts. And I just loved her candor and her willingness to really address not just her experience as a trans person, but how we as a society are continuing to, like, grow and in some cases get stuck in the grasping of like what the trans existence is and how it fits into our societal norms. So, you know, again, It's just like, well, don't call me white girl. Like, I'm going to end up being the serious person in some of these conversations because the guest is going to take it to the hilt. And baby, that is what T.S. Madison is always going to do. Okay. Were you always someone who was like this? Like, were you always an exuberant, like, big mouth, big voice person?
Yeah, I was. I used to get a lot of whoopings because I said everything I felt. I would get a whooping all the time. You can't say that. I would always get whoopings because I just said it. Because I felt it. And it's just like, I'm a person that always went back and checked myself. Sometimes I, ooh.
Maybe I said too much.
Maybe I said too much. Or maybe I said it the wrong way.
Right. Like, it was the truth.
But it didn't have to do that. I didn't have to do that. So y'all forgive me for that. I'm sorry. But I meant what I said.
There's that.
Because you're like that.
Yes. Like, I meant it. I could have said it with a bit more honey. But
girl, I see you are deep. That's why I love you, because you're that way. Like, you eat, but I understand where you're eating from. I get where you're coming from. Like you might go in harsh. You might go in with a pitchfork. You might didn't mean to stab them that deep, but you want to just get their attention. Yes. Like, bro, do you not see why I'm stabbing you? Because this house is on fire. I need you to come put the fire out.
Yes.
Not add to it.
You get me.
I do.
That's why I love you too.
I love you. I always have. Girl, I'm telling you, when you gathered that to Caitlyn Jenner, who I, for every moment, feels needs to be gathered up.
You know,
cause she is like,
well, I think she's an op,
I don't mean
pre-op or post-op.
I don't either. She's a op.
I think she's an op, and I think ultimately
a plant.
Yes,
like
I think she was put in place to undermine the work that so many of y'all have been doing, and it's like the black folks. She's the trans version of a coon. She's a troon.
Yeah, she's a Candace Owen.
She's a troon. I don't know who that is. I don't know her. But Caitlyn Jenner, she is a troon. I don't know her.
But sister, do you see what I'm saying? So you get why I feel the way I feel. Like, bro, why are you, ma'am? That is...
People at this point, the internet has made it so that everyone really feels like they're just talking to themselves, I feel, a lot of times. And I can tell you, like, as someone who lives out loud, it took some time for me to realize that I'm talking into my phone and I'm in my house by myself and I'm rah, 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 rah. But people who are receiving this, I'm in their house and they're just receiving me talking solely to them. Mm-hmm. And so it created this persona for me that I didn't even intend to, mm-hmm. because they were like, Amanda's always angry. Amanda's always yelling. Amanda, because when I'm upset about something, I'm just talking to my phone and then they think I'm talking to them. And so literally when I got to the reel, it became this whole thing like, oh, Amanda's confrontational. I was like, when y'all see me confrontational with somebody?
Because they saw you just expressing how you feel. Like,
and I'm like, I'm not talking to a person.
I'm just opening up my phone.
Yeah.
That's the same thing way with me. Like, I would open up. My whole career is built off of me opening up my phone, just expressing the way I feel.
Yes. You receive from the antenna.
Yeah.
Like, these are antennas.
Yeah.
And here you go.
And there you go. And, like, I'm not talking to one person in particular. I'm, like, picking up. You know, you just vent into your phone.
Yes.
Because it's in you. And... You
it's supposed to be out of you.
And you not really mad at nobody. You just like, you know what?
It's passion.
I'm so sick of this that's going on. Like, you're not mad. You just,
you care.
That's what it is.
It's caring. It's love. It's represented in this way. And also, like, at a certain point, you start to learn that, like, anger presents in a number of different ways. And when it's like that, it's fear.
Because mm-hmm.
you like, this is really where we at.
Yes.
Ooh.
Makes me so mad, and I get so mad at stuff like this outside of trans stuff. Like, I get mad at stuff like black people. I wish
we loved us. Yes. When we talk about, reparations, like, I feel like there's so many people who would get in the way of reparations because they're like, you don't deserve reparations. You don't deserve reparations. And I'm like, why is, what?
So my comment to that is, I always feel, that certain black people don't want rights. They want privilege. They want to move the white man over to do exactly what the white man has been doing. They want to have the authority to do that. I watch it with television programming.
Name an example.
Well, there's lots of television programming out right now. And I love that a lot of things are black owned and black operated, but also we have to deprogram black people from.
How do I like, I like, when I tell y'all, what you know? Because I know what you're talking about.
We have to deprogram black people from liking. Okay, it's good that everybody makes $1 million.
They don't actually make $1 million. There's that part. They don't. The come up is not 0 to 100 real quick. So it's just that they're quantifying fame as collateral. And it's not.
You see me doing them. You see me doing them with Sophia Rock.
Oh, Miss Sophia, jail. Oh, I'm not.
I sat in that jail. I'm about to rot. Mm. You see me, but sister, you also hear me and you feel me.
I do feel you because, like, that's the real. You gotta. Like, you have to
unprogram.
Our souls are sold for cheap swap meet prices.
I'm not going to be on. I'm sorry. Maybe I won't be on television long all the time. I'm not busting you in the head with no bottle on TV.
I did not work for 3 years because it had got so popping. All of the reality TV was the only thing. And these agents was like, if you're not willing to act crazy or be hypersexual, you can't work. Like, that was what I was told. Like, you're not going to work. And I was like, but I'm a poet. They're like, don't nobody want no poetry. Take that crap. I mean, it's just, and we're still in it. I mean, I told Mona Scott to her face, you're a villain. I told her to her face, you're
about,
a villain.
What about Zeus Network?
I don't even know about Zeus Network. What's happening at Zeus Network? I mean, the Krayshawn and the
blue face.
Yeah. The crew face.
I mean, listen, I give them, I respect and I respect and I give them their props for being black owned, black operated. But there has to be, and I watched the interview with the CEO. Is it Lemuel? Okay. I watched an interview with him he did on Fox Soul, you know, and he was saying that he has created content that black people don't pay attention to. Like he said, they don't like. And I'm like, well, you got to force it.
So that's the part. I really feel like it's a cop-out when we say, like, this is the content that, like, black people don't. So I'm an example, right? Like, I'm not going to make that. But as an independent creator, I also have to support myself through my creativity.
Right.
So we have to sometimes tweak and hone and move things around to find the way that we can most authentically connect with our audience without insulting our audience, right? And that isn't necessarily the easiest thing to do, but it just requires some effort. And I feel like that's what really boils down to. Like, folks don't want to spend the money to figure that out. They'd rather just say, you know what, screw it. Let's just give them.
It's boring. That's
boring. Let's give them the Hennessy. Let's just give them the Hennessy.
It's boring. And now it was just like, set cameras up, fight.
That's easier. And they will tell themselves, well, that's what they want. We're just giving them what they want. Well, that's the same argument that drug dealers make, right? I mean, they going to do it from somebody else. They going to smoke it from somebody else. Well, if none of y'all was here, they wouldn't, because they wouldn't even have the option.
Right.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You know, black media is really its own unique space because the black existence, particularly in America, is its own unique space. And even as we are watching that erasure and the legislative effort to undermine the necessity to be literally intentional with making spaces for black people in a country that was very intentional and continues to be intentional in keeping black people out of spaces of equity, we know that black media has to be on top of that. We know that black media has to be able to speak to our unique existence.
So when it comes to the next generation of influential Black voices, I'm really happy to see that they can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. So hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you know, Kim on Stage is somebody that I've known as a colleague for a few years now. I've always just been inspired by his steadfastness, like that man just be posting, and just his creativity with business, you know, in creating his own app, you know, in his Patreon following, and the consistency that he does that with is so, it's admirable. He's also just been a great resource whenever I feel like I'm looking for certain people, like videographers or editors, et cetera. Like Kev on Stage will be like, oh, I have somebody for you. And so you got to really appreciate that because it's something that is very hard to find sometimes. That being said, I had never met his wife, Melissa. And I guess I had just like, I don't know why I did this, but I worked up in my mind that Melissa was like hardcore. And that she, I don't know, like I felt like maybe she was gonna be kind of like standoffish. But when we did this episode, first of all, let me just tell y'all this. They got here a week early. Okay, they got here a week early and we were not expecting them. And then here they were just at the front door in their pink, baby. Okay, and we were like, wait, oh no. And then we just said, you know what? Screw it. We're going to make it happen. So we did the episode on the fly. I'm still apologizing for the audio. I know people were like, why aren't there two mics? Y'all, it was a tizzy. We was trying to just get it together. We were just trying to do it. Nonetheless, I have had so many people hit me about this episode and just how great they felt like the content was, but also about how much they felt like they learned about just relationship dynamics and family dynamics from Kev and Melissa. Even my mother called me and was like, that Kev on Stage episode was really good. There were some really good lines in there. But also for me, it was a best of because I really appreciated that they were like, you know, we really like your interview style, because I really do make a point of trying to create a space here that has a unique interview style. And sometimes I get comments from people saying like, oh, you never let people finish their sentences. You're always talking over folks. You know, you think you're the star. And it's like, I am the star. I just want to remind y'all that like, this is me. That's me. I used to have a blonde afro when I designed this logo. I drew this logo. This is me. So yes, I am the star. That being said, I am very fortunate to be sharing this couch with stars of all different types. And I also am somebody who like, you know, my brain be moving fast, y'all. Like somebody, sometimes I'm just like, oh my God, sometimes I want to finish the thought to feel just like connected. But this was a really fun episode. And I think it was very eye-opening for a lot of people who, again, place this like relationship goals on people without truly understanding the real difficulty of being connected with somebody. And they really beautifully, and I gotta give it to Kev. He very graciously and humbly talked about his ways that he has had to learn and grow.
When I watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, I obviously not as good as Michael Jordan, but one thing we both do, we are gonna create enemies to defeat, to build ourselves up. Mm. And unchecked, anyone can be that enemy. Mm-hmm. So
say that one more time. You're gonna create.
I'm gonna create enemy. Michael Jordan would hype himself up, bump into a coach. Coach and say this.
Did you ever do that with Melissa?
Yes.
Oh, I was enemy.
That's what I'm gonna tell you, Amanda. I didn't know we were gonna
I'm single. No, I'm not even joking. That's why.
I believe
it's hard to navigate.
I'll give you the moment. I made Melissa an enemy, and she was an enemy for a few years.
Shut the up, Barack. Like,
well, do you want me to tell you the truth, or do you want me to lie? I do. I'm messing
up. I mean, tell me more.
That's so
shut up.
And Tom, why are you quiet?
Why are you quiet? You're moving too slow.
Now, I don't mean I didn't love her. We were mean to each other, but I clocked. First tour. We are planning this tour, right? In hindsight, it all makes sense. At the moment, I'm not seeing clearly. We're planning this tour. I'm at work at All Def. She's at work at her aerospace company. She's also, and I had an hour and a half drive in traffic, right? Okay. So I'm calling her. We have a conference call with her, me, her, and the tour manager. And we're trying to set up dates, having a call, whatever. Mm-hmm. Melissa, being not only the string, but the person who's picking up the slack at home, has picked up both of our children. She is doing homework. The boys are on the table and she's cooking dinner and she's on this conference call, right? So on the conference call, she's going on mute when she's not talking because you hear sizzling, boys three times, like she in the middle of it.
And the boys are boys.
And the boys are boys.
They're small.
Yeah, they're baby. Like three times three is what? Shut up, kid. We're going to the top. None of this is going to be important. Don't worry about it. I got you.
Right.
Right? So she eventually is like, I think you couldn't do this call. Yeah, right?
Something.
For whatever reason, she's like, I really can't do it at this time.
It was at this time.
She was like, hey, this time is like really bad because the boys just got home. I got to cook dinner, help homework. Can we do this an hour later or on a different day? Something very reasonable.
Yes.
Right? Do I take it like that? No. What I say is, don't worry about that. I got you. I'm going to talk to the producer next
time. What was the feeling that you had in that moment, though? Do you remember?
I do. This is not as important to her as it is to me, mm-hmm. right? Because now I know how Melissa is. I'll give you the now and then. Now I know when Melissa gets her back against the wall, she will choose family and the boys over her own stuff more than she will choose the work. I love my children.
So we are the same.
Yeah. Thank you. In my mind, I'm very much like, this is how I'm choosing my family.
Right.
I'm going to build a legacy for them.
Okay. Okay.
So that might mean I can't be there to help you for homework, but also
I'm building
something so that you might not have to go to college. And if you do, I can actually pay for it instead of having to do financial aid, or I can give you a job later, but I got to go to work right now. Right. So that's how I'm thinking.
Which is not noble.
Nobody's
like,
wrong.
Like, it's honorable. Yeah.
Nobody's wrong. But we're not moving. This is all hindsight. Synergy. We're not moving in synergy.
What got you to synergy? Real quick, therapy?
Therapy.
We'll get back to that.
Time. Therapy and mostly therapy. And time and vulnerability, I would say. Those three. So the next time, I'm like, you know what? I got you. Don't even worry about it. You don't have to be on this call. So then I get home. The next day, she's like, how was the call? I was like, oh, we did it without you. Because I know you was just cooking dinner. Right? And she didn't
say
no.
What are your signs?
Taurus and Cancer.
You're a Cancer?
I am. Are you a Cancer?
Crab?
Crab.
Yes. Oh, yes. What's your birthday?
July 11th.
July 1st.
Oh, well,
one.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. So, and in that moment, I can honestly say,
we are loyal to the bone.
Yeah. I wasn't on some like, I'm going to show you at that moment. I was just like, I'm actually going to help you, right? But this is where it got worse.
Okay.
Melissa, for this tour, my brother was supposed to tour manage. Mm-hmm. He got sick. He couldn't do it. We hired somebody else to do it. Melissa was supposed to quit her job mm-hmm. to fully help, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
At the last second, and tell me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. last second, she gets cold feet. She decides, I'm not going to quit.
The string was stringing.
She decides, I'm not going to quit.
Are you a Virgo anywhere in your chart?
We don't go past the main things.
No, because that's where my string is. I'm a Virgo rising. That it's like, let's calm down. Let's settle.
Let's settle.
Type A.
So when she decided not to quit her job and work part-time, mm-hmm.
So that was the middle ground.
Yes,
that was the middle ground.
That was a compromise.
But it wasn't for me.
But it was for me.
To me, that was...
So you wanted... So your version of belief was...
Bonnie and Clyde, we're robbing the bank together. We're either going to get away with the money or we're going to jail.
Amanda's face is concerned.
Are we getting
because
away with the money?
Because y'all have kids.
We have kids.
Exactly.
But my belief is
how much of that is attached to just male...
I think a lot of it. I think the combination of maybe patriarchy, ego, competition, and if I can be honest with myself, not appreciating or valuing what was important to her enough in the moment.
That's good.
I think I wasn't, I'm like, oh, okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it, but do what I want to do.
That's You're not a dark important. Cloud. Like, why are you raining on my parade?
Just jump with me, baby. Jump with me. So
not realizing that she was jumping with you.
She was in her way.
It's just
way.
That you were, she was turning.
Yes.
The turner got to be solid.
Come on.
1,000%.
The ground got to be
you
solid.
You can't jump good if you're turning.
You're jumping though. Jump, turn. Yeah, I see you.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I wasn't valuing that enough. And over the years, I've learned that, you know, it's balanced. Sometimes it's more me, sometimes more her.
Absolutely.
But her listening to her, at her, and I say this to her on calls or after calls all the time. At our worst, if we agree with you, the worst case scenario is our money safe. Mm-hmm. If we listen to me, our worst case scenario, our money not safe.
All right, so we're going to head over to Patreon so I can talk about my personal best ofs of 2023, okay? So join us at theamandaverse.com.
The last dose.
So there you have it. Those are our 2023 best ofs for Small Doses. I would love for you to drop in the comments what your best of episodes are on Small Doses podcast or any moments that stand out to you that you remember that live inside your head rent free. We are going to continue on this path of giving you dope content, of bringing people into the space to create interviews and conversations that you're not going to get anywhere else. And I'm going to continue to just do my best to not talk over people. And to encourage every single person on here to go to therapy, because y'all know it ain't a Small Doses episode if I don't ask somebody if they either are going to therapy or have been to therapy. Tell a friend, continue to share and spread the word about Small Doses podcast. Continue to like, comment, and subscribe. Continue to download. And please just remember, you know, we're going into a new year. We have learned so much on this show, and I hope that we take all that learning in order to be better us for a better year and hopefully a better world in 2024. Because this world right now, as Representative Jasmine Crockett would say, it's in the shitter. And you can check her out on Side Effects of Gathering the Government.